This is The Exchange on KUCB. I'm Stephanie Joyce. Coming up today, once a year, representatives from across the region gather at the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference to discuss economic priorities and challenges for the year ahead. Affordable energy was front and center at this year's event, along with the region's broadband plan and transportation networks. And Alaska Mayor Shirley Marquardt was at the meeting and joins me in the studio today to talk about the conference and to answer your questions. Thanks for joining me, Mayor Marquardt.
Thanks for having me.
And to get started, let me remind listeners that they can call in with their questions or comments. The number is 581-2161, or you can send an email to news@kucb.org. Now, to start off with, I know that you weren't able to attend the Day of Energy workshops at the meeting, but maybe can you tell me what the conference has been doing? I know you're very involved in what's going on throughout the year. Can you tell me what the conference is doing to address energy issues in the region?
Yes. The Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference speaks, obviously, for a very specific geographical area. And we've got kind of unique challenges and problems, we think, throughout the state. And certainly the high cost of energy is one of them, because everything that we get is transported by ship. It's either flown in or it comes in by barge or vessel. And for many communities, including ours, our potential for growth, our ability for economic stability is directly tied to the cost of energy. It's very almost impossible to get folks to come in and start up a new industry or a new business if they look at the cost of doing business and say, holy mackerel, in order to pay these high energy costs, I'm going to have to charge this much for my services. And I don't think people are going to pay that. So it's a very serious issue for our communities, and the Swampsea Conference has been very vocal in Juneau with our legislators, with Senator Hoffman and Representative Herron and Bryce Edgman, obviously, before. And we work with the folks from Kodiak, Mr. Osterman and Senator Stevens from Kodiak, on trying to encourage them to provide a comprehensive statewide energy plan that reflects the ability of Alaska, this incredibly energy-rich state, and we have this inability to provide our own state with those energy resources in a way we can afford it.
And there's been a lot of talk recently of a regional energy approach, you know, using Southwest Alaska's many communities working together to bring more affordable energy to the communities that are part of the conference. What's been the progress on that, or has there been any?
Yeah, I think the progress has been just a better, more open discussion with more options. We're really starting to look at liquefied natural gas as a possibility, if we can get the stranded gas from the North Slope down to, you know, wherever it would come. Some folks say Valdez and other folks say it should be Nikiski. But the ability to do what the Norwegians are doing, we kind of look at that as a plan. And they've got small LNG freighters that travel through the islands of Norway to small communities, fishing communities much like ours, and deliver just the amounts of LNG they need to provide either fuel for their powerhouse, and they also do it for private homes, for cars. So that's kind of in the baby stages, because LNG itself is in the baby stages of how it's going to be produced, who's going to be produced it, how much is it going to cost to be produced, where is it going to go, who's going to carry it. You know, holy mackerel.
A lot of questions.
A lot of questions. But it's gained a lot of interest, and we're really focusing on that for the next year.
Now, I know that one of the focuses at Swampsea has traditionally been how municipalities collaborate with their main industry, which in this region is seafood processing. Have there been any discussions recently about collaborating with processors on maybe these LNG plans or other ways of bringing more affordable energy to the community?
You know, I think our communities are so different in Southwest Alaska. Most of the communities, except for Unalaska, are communities that might have one processor in them. And that's where all their fuel comes through there. Often they buy their fuel for their homes or for their powerhouse from that processor. So there's a bit of a different dynamic there for them. For Unalaska, yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense. We've talked to we've been talking to our seafood producers for several years, trying to see if we can encourage them to come online with the city in order to get rid of some of the old, really inefficient iron that's turning out energy, that's expensive for them to permit, it's expensive to run. And, you know, they've just always felt very strongly they need an absolute confidence in the consistency of the power that they receive. So now we're bringing in this whole idea of LNG, and there's definitely interest there. But it comes back to the same old questions, okay? How would you provide it? How can we be sure you're going to have a real consistent shipments of LNG? Where is it coming from? But it makes an awful lot of sense because, you know, the scale, if you can provide something, buy large amounts of something on a large scale and spread it over a lot of users, you almost always bring your cost down. So that's what we definitely would want to do.
But no definitive discussions on how one might go about doing that at this point.
Not really. We kind of started at this last SWMC meeting. We had a panel with community leaders and processors, managers, of basically how they cooperate, how they operate with each other, or they might operate in some ways separately from each other, and how things have changed so drastically in the fisheries and in local municipal government over the last 20 years, but even the last 10 years. And the changes are coming so fast now that it's just making more and more sense for the city leaders and the processors to sit down and say, how are we going to attack this problem? So that was a really good conversation to start, and I thought it was very positive.
And speaking of, you know, industry involvement in bringing better, you know, access to energy and broadband internet to the region. I know that there was a panel discussion at SWMC this year about how to bring faster, better internet mm-hmm. out to the region. And my understanding is that one of the Alaska Broadband Task Force members, Bill Popp, gave a presentation to the conference and said that the Broadband Task Force is hoping that all of Alaska can have speeds of up to 100 megabits mm-hmm. per second by 2020. And, you know, that's right now that's the fastest of the fast internet in the lower 48. And it's about 100 times faster than the internet that we currently yeah. have out here. Do you think that that's a realistic goal?
I think it's a realistic goal. I'm not sure how confident I am that it could happen by 2020. Bill Popp's been a great advocate for this idea, for this program statewide, and he has spoken to the legislators and businesses and AML and SWMC, and it just keeps coming down to this huge amount of money. You know, you get used to speaking in millions, and after a while, millions, you know, 100 million doesn't seem like that much. It's a tremendous amount of money, but it doesn't seem like that much. But for this program to be as comprehensive as the state would like to see it, I think I heard you say it was a $1 billion project. So that might be a little tough, but I think as far as OCS development goes, if that continues to move forward in the next 5-10 years, then I think that our chances of getting that broadband, at least up through Southwest and through Unalaska, I don't know if it would go all the way out to ADEC, but the Unalaska and then go up west, Kotzebue, Nome, Barrow Point, Hope, things like that, that's a possibility.
And so that would be a collaboration, presumably, between the oil industry and, you know, local companies or even the local government, maybe?
It could be. I think it would probably need to be all of the above, quite frankly, because the amount of money is so huge. And what industry might want, they just might really want something up in one general area. And, you know, the state might want something in a far more regional sense. And then local communities might want something completely different. So it's just going to have to be a collaboration. And I think it's going to be a bit of a slow, you know, haul. But the baseline information is there. The need is there. The desire is there. You know, the positive push to try and make something happen, if that kind of money could be forthcoming, is already there. So, you know, in a sense, that's we've taken the first few steps.
Did you talk to any other regional leaders at the conference about what they're doing to encourage broadband development in their communities?
You know, everybody's kind of doing the same thing. We're working through basically our representation in Washington, D.C., because that's where the money, quite frankly, would need to come from, or the collaboration. Senator Begich, he's very keen on the idea, as is Senator Murkowski, and more so for just industry and for local municipalities, but for learning opportunities, for telemedicine opportunities. Not so much, you know, downloading your favorite song, but, you know, other practical purposes are the real driver of this. And then, you know, everything else that comes behind it would be just kind of icing on the cake. They understand the need. They're definitely proponents of it. But, you know, the reality is it's a lot of money. And so I think it's just going to take a while.
And so, you know, you're saying that most of that money would eventually need to probably come from the federal government or the state. I mean, what is the city's role
right.
in all of this, in making sure that, you know, our community doesn't get left out?
Oh, well, yeah, we talked to all of our legislators about it, make sure that they understand how important it would be to link Unalaska into the system. For those reasons, we've talked to one of the companies, and I can't think of Kenai Cable Company, maybe early on had come to us. And they were looking for some property that they could put a repeater station. And of course, we said, we will give you the property on Front Beach. We will help in any way that we can as, you know, as the local government to make sure this happens, to make sure it comes through Unalaska. So it's way up there on our list. And we talk about it statewide, and we talk about it to our federal folks every time we see them.
Right. And I guess, you know, in terms of it being an important priority for you, obviously it's an economic driver. And I know that there was a report put out in December that you helped introduce that was about, you know, how broadband can drive our regional economies. Can you talk a little bit about what's so important about bringing the internet?
Well,
faster internet.
The opportunities that the internet brings to communities that don't have the wherewithal for maybe marketing, branding, maybe seafood that comes out of their region, maybe industry opportunities that they might have, whether it's for the transportation industry or for the service support sector industry. Being able to reach out and let people know who you are and what you do and where you are is almost impossible for a lot of rural Alaska. When you have the internet, when you have this tool at your disposal, you can reach out and touch somebody in China. You know, you can, and we've had Chinese investors who are, you know, coming in, you know, are interested in looking at property and land in Unalaska. And they're finding all this information through the internet, through information that's on there. So, you know, it's going to be more than just getting that internet connection. You know, these communities are going to have to spend some time and effort. And hopefully, maybe they'll get some, you know, really smart kids right out of high school, you know, or a graduate from UAA or UAF who will come back to that community and say, I can put together this website. I can market this community. I can show people all over the world or down in Louisiana or Houston or wherever they may be why they need to be paying attention to our little neck of the woods. So it's just tremendous potential. Otherwise, you just kind of – nobody even knows who you are. I am still amazed. I cannot believe how many people in the state, even in our legislature, don't have a clue about Unalaska and our port. It makes me a crazy woman.
Certainly, the internet is a good way of getting information out there. You know, we're running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you also about another discussion that I know happened at the conference about the region's transportation networks. I understand that there was a panel discussion with mostly the regional airlines, but also with the ferry system, and that as a result of maybe the discussion, or I'm not sure, maybe you can fill me in on this, but there was a resolution from the, you know, the Swampsea board saying we want the Alaska Marine Highway System to replace the Testamina. It's an old vessel and it's no longer reliable. Can you tell me, was that on the agenda before the recent announcement that the Testamina would be delayed this spring?
No, that was driven directly from the announcement that she was not going to be able to come out of dry dock when we thought, and they were going to miss the first three sailings out the chain, which is pretty important, folks, for salmon fishing. They get a lot of their gear and their equipment and people out there. So I talked to a couple folks from Port Lions and from Cold Bay that were really concerned about it. And said, why don't you go ahead and write a resolution for Swampsea, and we'll just take that resolution and letters of support from up and down the chain and make sure that the MTAP board gets that for their next meeting where they'll actually discuss. Now, MTAP just had a meeting in Juneau, but it was a work session specifically on the new Alaska-class ferry and really didn't touch base on the TUSTE. However, the MTAP board has already put in our list of priorities, and the governor has that. We've said that is the absolute next ferry. That ferry has to be replaced next because there are just no other options, no other good options. The Kennecott is going to come out and make about half of the stops because she's just so large. She can't fit in some of the smaller communities, which, of course, benefit the most from the ferry system because the cost is so high to fly in there, especially if you're flying in food and goods or parts or if they have some sort of a project that's going on. Quite often, the contractors will bring their equipment out on the ferry. Because it makes them that project affordable for a small community. So it's a really big deal to keep that service out here as much as possible. And it's getting very good traction in the legislature at this point, not only from legislators in the Southwest region, but other legislators are really starting to understand the benefit of that ferry system and how it actually connects people then to interior Alaska. So we'll see. We'll be back in Juneau in a couple of weeks. And again, that'll be one of the first things that we bring to the governor. And he's very well aware of it and supports it. I just don't know what DOT is going to do.
Right. So that resolution brought it, I guess, to the forefront maybe a little bit. And now the MTAB board is responsible for actually moving forward on the issue.
Well, they're responsible for making recommendations to the governor. And then it's completely up to the governor and DOT staff to decide what they want to do. But the whole purpose of the MTAB is to be able to really vet ideas, options, and really try and keep your eye on the whole picture, the whole system-wide picture from 40,000 feet instead of just focusing in on everybody's little areas. And that can be a little difficult, but I think it's worked out pretty well the last few years. So the recommendation, again, from MTAB to the governor has already been TUSTE needs to be replaced, next replacement vessel sooner than later. And what this resolution did, with help from Bob Heron, who had a great idea, he suggested that all the legislators in the area that were affected by the TUSTE-MENA schedule, that they would find somewhere in their capital money from the state this year, you know, $25,000 each, to get $100,000 in the kitty for a feasibility study, just something to kickstart it and to make it happen. And I think that is going to wake up a few people as well. I thought it was a great idea, and I really appreciate Bob Heron for he just took that on and said, let's go do it.
All right. Well, it was great hearing about the conference. That's all the time we have. But thank you so much for coming by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me anytime.